This is Radio EcoShock. I'm your host, Alex Smith. One way to curb consumption of fossil fuels in the hope of controlling climate change is a tax on carbon. The first carbon tax in North America has appeared in the Canadian province of British Columbia on the Wild West Coast. This really matters, people. It sets an example and may start a series of similar measures in the most progressive American states. Changing our tax structures can, as the Friends of Earth say, decarbonize the tax code. Governments can encourage some behaviors and discourage others through the tax system. For the past many decades, governments have been handing out subsidies to the oil and gas industry, as you know, to encourage energy development. Even though we know fossil fuels are wrecking the environment and people's lives, both the Canadian and the American government continue to give huge tax breaks, billions of dollars a year, to the oil sands, to the most profitable companies in the world like ExxonMobil, which made $39 billion in profits just last year. That tax system encourages the end of the climate as we know it. We've got to change it. But what if governments could penalize carbon production and encourage conservation and alternative energy through that same tax system? Like Schwarzenegger in California, the Premier of British Columbia has sworn to drastically reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Since BC gets most of its power from hydroelectricity, the largest single source of greenhouse gases in that province is the transportation system, mainly cars and trucks. Isn't this just another big government tax grab? Carol Taylor, the finance minister for British Columbia, says no. They have announced a revenue-neutral plan. While the price of carbon goes up due to the added tax, the income tax rate will go down, and BC will mail a check for $100 to every resident, helping the poorest, they hope, who don't pay taxes. In balance, the government won't make a dime out of the new taxes, they say, and theoretically, it won't cost consumers any more either, providing over time they continue to seek out better energy solutions, like buying a more fuel-efficient car. The tax covers all the fossil fuels at the consumer level, including home heating oil. But it doesn't apply to gas and oil producers themselves, which is a big loophole, and the cement companies also get a free ride. The legislation isn't perfect, but it is still an important milestone. A group of 70 economists in the province called for this revenue-neutral carbon tax. It was backed by the largest environmental groups, and even the Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business, backed the plan. Business will also get a reduced tax rate to offset their higher carbon costs. Let's listen to BC Finance Minister Carol Taylor announce the first carbon tax in North America in the legislature. One note for listeners, the PST she refers to is the BC Provincial Sales Tax, which will be reduced or removed for some green alternatives.
The carbon tax will apply to a wide range of fossil fuels, including gasoline, diesel, coal, propane, natural gas, and home heating fuel, making it among the broadest and most comprehensive taxes of its kind in the world. It will start at a rate of $10 per ton of associated carbon or carbon equivalent emissions. That works out to 2.4 cents a litre at the gas pump, 2.8 cents a litre for diesel and home heating fuel. These initial rates are relatively low, and that is by design. It will give customers, consumers, business, industry, and the economy time to adapt to this new landscape. The rate per ton will rise by $5 a year for the next 4 years, reaching $30 a ton by 2012. I want to repeat, this tax will be 100% revenue neutral. We expect it to raise approximately $1.8 billion over 3 years. So we are committing now to reduce taxes by that amount. We are investing more than $1 billion over 4 years in a series of programs and tax incentives to help make greener choices easier, more accessible, more affordable. On the transportation side, we are providing a sales tax reduction for all vehicles that qualify for Transport Canada's Eco-Auto Rebate Program. That program offers rebates of up to $2,000. With this new PST reduction, drivers making greener choices could see additional savings for a total of up to $4,000. To help get some older vehicles off the road, we are expanding around the province our Scrap It program, which offers cash and other incentives for making cleaner choices. PST relief will be introduced for electric bicycles, scooters, electric motorcycles. Relief will be provided for short-term passenger vehicle rentals, and this one addresses the co-op car rental issue that has been brought forward this past fall. With this budget, we're also providing $30 million for the BC Green Ports Initiative, which will reduce emissions from commercial truck and ship traffic. Another $3 million will help reduce emissions from trucks by using technology to assess their compliance with regulations while they're moving instead of making every vehicle stop for inspection, and by providing plug-ins at key truck stops so that big rigs don't have to idle their engines. We will also provide a PST exemption for aerodynamic devices that make commercial trucks more fuel efficient. As well, with this budget, we're funding the initial phase of the $14 billion transit plan announced last month, a plan designed to double transit ridership by 2020. These are all very important changes, considering that transportation is the leading contributor to BC's greenhouse gas emissions. On the home energy side, $60 million has been budgeted for energy audits and conservation retrofit incentives for homeowners. This money will help individuals and families assess where they can best invest to bring down their own home energy costs. If you do decide to renovate your home, a tax exemption will be provided on insulation for hot water tanks, pipes, and ductwork. Energy Star rated fridges, freezers, and washing machines will also be exempt from PST, completing and complementing the rebate programs offered by utilities and, in some cases, by local and regional governments. To support the province's goal of achieving energy self-sufficiency, this budget sets aside $20 million for remote communities that now depend on diesel generators to switch to cleaner, renewable power sources, and this will be a benefit for many of our First Nations communities. This budget provides a PST exemption on production machinery and equipment used by local governments for power production and cogeneration. And we're investing $5 million to expand solar power initiatives. These investments complement our 2007 BC Energy Plan, the cleanest, the greenest of its kind in North America. We are also investing $3 million for our energy efficient building strategy, in keeping with the goal of meeting more of our new energy needs through conservation. Each of these initiatives brings us one step closer to the future that we envision for our province. It's a future where we leverage our action on climate change in ways that support our quality of life and our economy with new innovations, new ideas, and new technologies.
To give you a quick snapshot of carbon tax in other countries, I'm just going to quote directly from the Wikipedia entry. Quote, on January 1, 1991, Sweden enacted a carbon tax, placing a tax of 0.25 SEK per kilogram, that's $100 per ton, on the use of oil, coal, natural gas, liquefied petroleum gas, petrol, and aviation fuel used in domestic travel. Industrial users paid half the rate, between 1993 and 1997, and certain high-energy industries such as commercial horticulture, mining, manufacturing, and the pulp and paper industry were fully exempted from these tax rates. In 1997, the tax rate was raised again. In 2007, Sweden will raise taxes on carbon emissions. Finland, the Netherlands, and Norway also introduced carbon taxes in the 1990s. The United Kingdom Treasury imposed the fuel price escalator, an incrementally increasing pollution tax on retail petroleum products from 1993. The increases stopped after politically damaging fuel protests in 1999, at which time the tax and duty represented more than 75% of the total pump price. Tax now represents about two-thirds of the pump price in the UK. In 2005, New Zealand proposed a carbon tax, setting an emissions price of New Zealand $15 per ton of CO2 equivalent. The planned tax was scheduled to take effect from April 2007 and applied across most economic sectors, though with an exemption for methane emissions from farming and provisions for special exemptions from carbon-intensive business if they adopted the world's best practice standards. After the 2005 election, the minor party supporting the government opposed the proposed tax, and it was abandoned in December 2005. In the United States, in 1993, President of the United States, Bill Clinton, proposed a BTU tax that was never adopted. His vice president, Al Gore, had strongly backed a carbon tax in his book, Earth in the Balance, but this became a political liability after the Republicans attacked him as, quote, a dangerous fanatic. In 2000, when Gore ran for president, one commentator labeled Gore's carbon tax proposal a central planning solution, harking back to the New Deal politics of his father in April 2005. Paul Anderson, CEO and chairman of Duke Energy, called for the introduction of a carbon tax. In January 2007, economist Charles Komenoff and attorney Dan Rosenblum launched a carbon tax center to give voice to Americans who believe that taxing carbon emissions is imperative to reduce global warming. And that brief history of the carbon tax comes from Wikipedia. You can find out more about the American situation at www.carbontax.org. Of course, in September of 2007, Michigan Representative John Dingell proposed what he called a hybrid carbon tax. The bill had some really appealing ideas. In addition to a carbon tax, which included things like jet fuel, Dingell's bill called for an end to tax subsidies for monster houses over 4,200 square feet. There were many other measures. But the major green groups couldn't support any climate change initiative coming from that dark representative of Detroit. Mr. Dingell had led the charge year after year to prevent any meaningful fuel efficiency regulations for American car producers. Greenpeace descended on the parking lot of Dingell's district office, transforming it into a car dealership for gas guzzlers. After years of betrayal on CAFE fuel efficiency standards, where America has dragged behind Europe for decades, Dingell's bill seemed too much like Dick Cheney selling face protection armor for hunters. Meanwhile, America has been more focused on the alternative carbon reduction plan called cap and trade. This works more with original big polluters rather than consumers. For example, a giant coal-fired electricity plant in Ohio could pay for better burning coal equipment in China or even replanting some rainforest rather than cut back on their own emissions. The cap-and-trade system did work in the United States to help bring down sulfur emissions that were killing off lakes and forests with acid rain. But the international situation with greenhouse gases is much more complex. Cap-and-trade is open to wild abuse and corruption, which we have already found. I've seen reports of one Chinese company which made $800 million just by not opening a proposed polluting plant. Meanwhile, the original polluter kept on pouring out the greenhouse gases. We didn't really win anything from that. All the super capitalists on Wall Street back the cap-and-trade option. They are already testing out futures markets to make money out of climate change. These are the same people who just brought us the subprime and collateralized debt fiasco, which may, incidentally, bring down the whole economy we've been talking about. Frankly, it stinks. The carbon tax option is much more honest and likely to work, in my opinion. Oh, and by the way, Al Gore happens to have my opinion as well. We may eventually have some combination of efforts. Certainly the British Columbia plan isn't strong enough to really protect the climate. The province intends to keep on making money itself by selling off oil and gas rights and taxing production. It is in the oil and gas business the province is. Well, maybe that's why the original producers got off with no taxes. Surprise, surprise. But climate scientists like Andrew Weaver, a lead IPCC author, and Mark Jacquard, an expert in government carbon control, have backed the British Columbia carbon tax as an excellent start in a long process. Ian Bruce, climate campaigner for the David Suzuki Foundation, said, "It's a landmark decision in North America as far as governments taking strong action on climate change." You can find out more about the BC carbon tax from the best online source, the Tyee magazine. That's spelled T-Y-E-E. So the website is thetyee.ca. To wrap things up, here's an economist from the University of British Columbia, David Green. He was one of the 70 economists pushing for this legislation and a member of VTAC, Voters Taking Action on Climate Change. This clip comes from the Canadian TV broadcaster, the CBC.
For one thing, you should be clear, big business is going to be paying this as well. But really, ultimately, the power does lie with the consumers. If everyone changes, we're actually going to be able to have an impact here. You have to recognize what we're looking at is really a change in lifestyle. To do what BC wants, a one-third cut in greenhouse gas emissions, is huge. So You're going to need everybody really doing things to generate real change here.
Check out our website at ecoshock.org, and here's a tiny bit from Andy Sloan as Hummer Man.
Your voice fades and I'm lost in the shades and the system. Sucker tried to pass, so I laughed, yeah, I dissed him. 120 in a 55 zone. I'm leaving both you and the cops in the dust all alone. 8 miles to the gallon, but the tank is big. And one day I might have to save my wife and kids. When I pass, you'll hear it, you'll fear it. Got the pioneer spirit that made America great. The liberals hate, they stare at you, just jealous. Muttering something about he's so selfish. Their hatred is evident, the Hummer is heaven sent. Best of all, I'll write it off, thanks Mr. President. I spend what I need on the rims and the trim. And I can speed across the country on a whim. I can move any mountain, I can ford any stream. Chirp the tires in the parking lot to let off steam.
He's a rich guy. And he doesn't care.